The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to
Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling to the Max's Money in the Bank 2017 review show. And we are, of course, brought to you by W2Mnet.com, the place where you go find all your great wrestling needs and a ton more. Also, don't forget to go subscribe at Wrestling to the Max or the W2M Network, where you can get the entire W2Mnet family. Also, just want to let you guys know, hey, if you go ahead and do a rate and review for us, that'll give us a lot more help. And letting everybody know about us, the more eyes and ears on us, give you more open ability to get involved in the conversation. I am Gary Vaughn, and Mr. Sean Garmer, the modern Maharaja of W2Mnet.com, is here.
Wow. It's such an honor for Gary to give me, bestow upon me there. I feel so privileged. Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome. Enjoy it, you know. Tell me in your language. Tell your people in your language.
Bueno, hola, ¿cómo estás? You know, este es el Money in the Bank review del 2007. Okay, whatever. I'll stop talking Spanish so Gary can understand what I'm saying.
I know, right? But hey, you know, there is a section of people that understood exactly everything you said. So yeah. We didn't alienate too many people, hopefully. Oh, man. But yeah, we're excited about being here. Sadly, Paul is not able to be with us, but that's okay. We're going to have a great show. I am really looking forward to talking about this Money in the Bank because there's so many different things that are a little bit different than what we predicted, and it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of break down this entire show. Before I get started, though, I have to wish you a happy Father's Day, Sean. I hope you had a great Father's Day.
Well, I have to wish you happy Father's Day, too, Gary. I worked. I went back to work after being on vacation for a week. And Anaya, she was with great-grandma because I had to work. They didn't come until about when the pay-per-view was on, and I felt bad because by then I really couldn't do anything with her. So my Father's Day was a normal Sunday for me. Just go to work, watch the Confederations Cup just started, so I got to watch those two games, which were very fun. Got to finally see what it's like for soccer to have instant replay. We should talk about that after the show, Gary. That was really actually fun to... You think the NFL has it bad.
Uh-oh.
Watch soccer have replay. And yeah, it was a thrilling thing for Mexico. They almost lost and came back to win. And then... just watch this pay-per-view that we're about to talk about. So
yeah, exactly. And you know, my Father's Day wasn't so eventful. I mean, I just kind of did the normal. Went to church. I did win the drawing. They do a drawing every year for Father's Day, and I got that prize, $50. I was, hey, it's nice. I can go do something fun with the family with that. But you know, just a surprise because my wife won Mother's Day. So I promised everybody that goes to that church, I did not have a racket. I did not grease the palms to get the cash. I don't know how that happened. Very weird. But you know, maybe Sean, it's all leading up to a great show tonight because I was really looking forward to talking Money in the Bank. So there you go. Let's go ahead and get into it. Let's dive in head first, and let's by starting with what usually takes place pre-show. And I know, Sean, you did not get a chance to check this one out, but you didn't really need to. This is the High Bros versus the Colognes. And you got what you expected to get. You know, the High Bros, of course, are going to win this match, which they did. It was a decent back and forth, though. The High Bros didn't get every single thing. You know, it wasn't just a run-through squash. But the High Bros did look exciting. They looked very pumped to be a part of this. And they were able to get the victory here. So, you know, just got to give them props. I mean, and I have to ask you, Sean, I mean, since we're talking Hype Bros and the fact that they're back together, what do you see coming out of this? Because Mojo Rawley was supposed to kind of start doing his own thing. Now with Zack Ryder back in the mix, it looks like they're a tag.
Well, I mean, they were a tag to start with, right? So The only reason that Mojo even got to do anything by himself was because Zack Ryder got hurt. So, and what's funny is normally, a lot of times when that happens, unless you're a brother tag team or something like that, if you've been doing really well, they tend to not always put you back together right away. And I feel like they did have some kind of, say, a little bit of faith in Mojo. They had him beating Jinder, even though it was before Jinder was decided. They decided to have him be champion, but still, I mean, you're having him be in major roles, and he was starting to, I think he's starting to get traction. I hate to see him be in this kind of dead weight tag division, and you know, yeah, maybe they wind up being the next challengers for the Usos, and that's fine, because definitely, even though this thing with the New Day could go a while, and I don't have a problem with it, because New Day, you know, they're a tag team that has some length, but still, it's just the way that some of these tag teams have been treated, I almost kind of hope that we see Zack Ryder turn heel or something. It might be good for him, honestly. I don't know how many people might buy it, but SmackDown's so good with their creative. If they give Zack Ryder a really good reason and follow through on that, I bet they can make it work.
No, I think they could, and that's a great point. I really feel like a heel turn for Zack Ryder would be something special, because he's been a babyface for so long. And honestly, it's kind of weird to say this, but with the beard and the fact that, you know, he kind of seems like he's got a little bit of an edge to him. I think he could really bring that out and really do something special and really make the crowd hate him, because they've loved him for so long. They're kind of ticked that they spent so much time investing and being a fan of his, you know, so now they have to hate him. So I think that could work out. I think it's a good idea. The one thing, Paul kind of keeps going back to this when we talk about this, but that tag division really does need the help, and having the Hype Bros back in and they're now in the mix, it could really make this thing go a little bit with more ease than the struggles they've had in the past, because they're just not doing really well in that division. Of course, you can't really say Monday Night Raw is either, so it's kind of a slippery slope, but I do like your idea. And Mojo Rawley, I mean, I think for his due, I think he does a fine job, but I think he does deserve a chance to get a singles run eventually. You know, if they're not willing to do it now, he eventually does need it.
I mean, I can see the fans, and especially the kids, getting behind the whole staying hyped, and it's that's a really good message, you know, for the all the various campaigns that WWE does outside of the ring. Not to mention just he's just a fun loving guy, right? You can get behind that. I mean, there's people that hate it, obviously, because it's a very, you know, the bro culture and all that stuff, but I don't know. I think it could work for him if they really put that force behind him, if they want to. You got to show me something with the tag team division where I'm not going to be like, man, I almost don't want them to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right on, you know, and who knows?
I mean, sticking with that theme, though, because I think if they wanted to do this, because these guys, especially Zack Ryder, you know, he's known to be a fashion sort of guy himself, in that, you know, he wears those, like, you know, the slick shirts and all that kind of stuff, right? So why couldn't him and the Breezango, him and Mojo and Breezango have a feud for a while, just to see who could be your next contenders. And have them be on some fashion files like we saw on this show. I know you were loving this, Gary. I was sitting there thinking the whole time. I was like, oh, God, Miami Vice, the 80s. Oh. Like, Gary has to be loving all the colors. Oh, my God, there was a VHS tape, Gary. Like, somebody found, you know, people, this is where we used to watch. movies on back in the day before you had everything digital at your fingertips. You actually had to go buy a tape and rewind it and be kind and take it back to your local Blockbuster or whatever. But I just love this. This is so good. And at the end with the Dusty Rhodes is now a fashion icon. Who would ever thought that polka dot?
Yeah.
A fashion icon.
Yeah, and so we'll go ahead and skip it. We'll talk about that because it's not like it has to go in order. But yeah, would you know we had that Fashion Files video package and really just these guys doing Miami Vice, and I love the play on all the words, the Michael Jackson comments as they leave the room. You know, smooth criminal, and you know he says something like, oh. Well, we can't stop till we get enough. Just beat it.
Died, man.
That oh, I love it. So these guys are amazing. Just like you said, all the great stuff, the VHS tapes, just the cheese factor is so very, very high. But at the same point, it's so very good. And in that package, you got the chance to see that their mystery opponents said that, hey, you know, if you want to find out who attacked Breeze, then, you know, come to the ring tonight. We'll have a match. And, you know, guess who, Sean? It's the Ascension.
Oh,
they are the
boy.
Ones. And, you know, you were out of your seat when you heard that music, weren't you, Sean?
Let me tell you about the Ascension.
I know, right? But
biggest waste of space on the roster.
Hey, they have a spot right beside the Colognes, right?
No, I think the Colognes are a bit more serviceable at this point. Can somebody please go find the search party for American Alpha? Where the hell are they? Like, what did they do to deserve not being on these shows? I mean, God.
It's like Kurt Angle shows up on Raw, and then all of a sudden they can't be found. You know, it's weird.
I know, right? It's like, unless you were planning to draft them over to Raw and really do the Team Angle thing, like, I don't get it. Like, these guys are still really good. They're still really good wrestlers. I think people would rather see them than the Ascension or, you know, the Shining Stars. I mean, God, at this point, you could turn them heel, and I think they would have a gripe because they're not on TV. Mm-hmm. You could play they love to throw in, you know, reality stuff on SmackDown. You know? You could do it. Honestly.
You could. And, you know, maybe that would be good. But the problem is I think, really, American Alpha is such a babyface team. I'm a little bit more sold on Zack Ryder being healed than those guys turning heel, because I don't know if I can really believe Jordan or even Gable really playing that off too well. I think it would come off more whiny if they came and said, we're not getting enough time on TV, than it would be like, hey, these jerks are making a point about, you know, their spot here and their time on the roster and their time on the ring.
But that's the point. People don't really care about them. So what do you do? Like, the thing is, well, for one, you only have, like, New Day that people really care about on the face side. So, And you can't have everybody beating up on New Day. So, you could have them go beat up Breezango, but they're kind of jokes. So, are people going to care that much? Because I think when you get outside of pay-per-views and you don't have the smarter crowds, you know, unless you're in certain areas where you do, people just don't care. I think they find the Fashion Files stuff funny, but once they get to the ring, it's just kind of like, eh, you know. This match was like 3 minutes long. Whatever.
Yeah, it was. And that's why I, you know, don't even mind talking about it now, because it's very quick. You know, you do have Breezango winning this match, which kind of like you expected. I mean, this is kind of like the pre-show. You kind of knew what going in that there was no way Breezango was going to lose for the most part. I'd look at this as a situation where you have Breezango, who is a really good team for being a babyface. You get the High Bros, they do a good job. The New Day are getting involved and actually doing some things now here on SmackDown. And then you got the other side, you know, the Colognes, you have the Ascension, who really both those teams are just there to kind of, you know, work the faces. And then you got the Usos that come into play. But besides that, there's really not anybody that's strong, you know, to compete with on the heel side. So I don't know. It's a really interesting situation. It really, really is. And I think this tag division overall has a lot of work to be done for it. But they do have some pieces here that you can kind of look to see that, man, they do have a future. Let's just hope they do something with them. And I think it's a terrible thing that American Alpha is not a part of this. I would love to see, you know what, this would be the perfect, Sean. It just came to me. Next case that the Fashion Files have are finding, what, like you said, you were saying, why don't you send them out to go do that? I was thinking to myself, could you imagine the puzzle pieces those guys put together to go find them? I mean, that could take you through weeks and weeks of SmackDown. Yeah, leading up to SummerSlam. What if they did that leading up to SummerSlam? Adding different puzzle pieces and finding things like finding a gold. Well, then he didn't win a medal. But finding some Olympic stuff. Maybe finding some stuff from Jason Jordan's past. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be cool. And then they can find them. I don't know. So I think it would be good television is what I'm saying. And you could do the
I agree. I think definitely that would be something. It gives them a storyline for the Fashion Files, which I think you kind of need at some point. Like, I think they're great as their own little special thing, right? Especially if they're going to keep having themes to some of these, which, you know, they did wonderful with the Vice thing, and they weren't even in Miami. They were nowhere near that. So, I'm glad they don't even have anything to do with what the town they're in or anything like that. They just happen to just do them because they can. And I honestly give these guys 15 minutes on the network, give them their own show, Finding American Alpha for, you know, 10 episodes or something. Watch it be awesome. I mean,
it could be awesome, honestly. And I would definitely tune in. Oh, man. It'd be really, really fun. But yeah.
Wait, so there's one more thing that I guess didn't have to do with any matches, so we can go ahead and get out of the way. And I saw some rumors about it, but this was kind of a surprise. We knew they were around, but, you know, nothing concrete. Like,
oh, you're going to break it before I even get to talk about it. Oh,
yeah,
okay,
go ahead. Go ahead. No, go
okay,
ahead.
No, okay.
Present what happened here, Gary.
Okay, I want to jump into that, but I do want to say one thing before we get out of the tag thing. I think before it's over with, and I want WWE.com, anybody a part of WWE, to go straight to whoever's in charge of making sure that this happens. I don't know if Vince himself has to be the one that knows, but they need to do this. The next gimmick for the Fashion Files is Father Darling. Did you ever see that, Sean?
No, I did not.
Okay, back in the early 90s, there was a great mystery-solving team of a priest and a nun. You know the dad from Happy Days?
Okay, yes.
He was the priest.
Anyway, I could see Breeze just dressing up as a nun.
I can't wait. I wanted to do it. Get really religious, especially facing the Ascension.
Oh, man.
These guys worship the devil, so we worship God. So we're going to dress as a priest and nun.
Oh, God. Mordecai shows up just to...
Oh, man. I love it. So there you go. That's the tag division. We'll talk more about the tag stuff. And I definitely want to get Paul involved in that conversation. So make sure you check out tomorrow, W2M Part 1, Episode 252. We'll jump into a little bit of this and get Paul's ideas on some of that. But let's move over here and talk about what Sean was about to get into. And I have to say, Sean, as soon as this happened, I went on YouTube and searched for the music because I think that their entrance music is...
Oh, yes. Amazing. It is like 80s cheese.
Oh,
all over. Palettes. Yes.
Oh, so we get the surprise that Mike and Maria Kanellis are in WWE, and they are going to be a part of the SmackDown Live roster. And basically, they come in and they do this little cheesy kind of thing together where, you know, Maria states basically she's back and she's there, and, you know, she's there with the person that she left to go find. And of course, you know, they do the cheesy loving, you know, nuzzling thing. So it was okay. It was a little, you know, cheesy.
It's the TNA gimmick, but the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had to switch the last names. And I love the JBL. JBL, his
no,
face.
That's why they did it, though. It's because Maria is the star here. Mm-hmm. It's not the other way around where TNA was thinking, okay, well, we're bringing Maria in, but the guy we're going to use is because, you know, Maria's not a wrestler. So, or she is, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, Lana levels, even Marie kind of levels of wrestling. So, like, Mike Bennett was the guy with the brand. Mike Bennett's the star we're trying to make. Mm-hmm. For WWE, Maria is the star for them. So nobody really knows who Mike Bennett is. So let's make him Mike Kanellis, and they'll immediately understand that they're together. And if they want to, they can go on Twitter, find out they're married. And then, you know, I mean, they'll also be perfect for Total Divas if Total Divas lasts another season. I don't know if, the Bellas can handle Maria. This is going to be interesting, too, because, you know, eventually if Nikki comes back, they're going to have to deal with that. But, this is all because Maria is a star. And so mm-hmm. I think it's also a rib by Vince McMahon, because we know how very macho he can be of, oh, the man is taking the woman's last name. And JBL gives you exactly what Vince's thoughts are on the man taking the woman's last name. He took her name. Oh my God, it is 2017 and we still cannot get out of the 1970s.
I just love that Texas drawl. He took her name. Like, that's just dumb.
the worst thing ever that could have been done is that he took her name. Like, basically telling you, well, this dude's a pussy. It's a,
yeah,
you know.
Basically, in a way, yes. Yeah, but, you know, honestly, I think a lot of people would take her last name if that they were in that spot. So
yeah, if you're going to get a starring role on SmackDown, I think almost anybody would take her name in a heartbeat, you know. So
yeah, along with sharing the hotel room, I think.
Right? I was trying not to make it about that far, but, you know, you beat me too.
Come on,
so.
Sean. You watch enough New Japan every time that she's a part of that.
Oh, God. You know, they should have had it on Raw so Carl Anderson could have a moment with her again.
Oh,
they're missing that. They're missing that whole.
You know it's going to happen at SummerSlam.
Oh, my God. They need to do it. They need to do it. Like, Carl Anderson just meets her in an aisleway and goes, oh, we meet again.
the New Japan.
And then he chases her throughout the hall. Oh, man.
Gonna be a pop like you've never heard
from like awesome. 10 people.
Yeah, unless you live in Japan.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. I mean, this is great though, Sean. To be honest, I know we're joking about it, but I think it's gonna be really interesting. And you know, I'm honestly not a huge fan of Mike. I call him Bennett, but he has Mike Kanellis now. I have to get used to that. I think he's okay.
He's fine.
He's a decent worker.
He's fine. He's just fine. There are worse wrestlers than Mike Bennett, right?
Yeah, there are. I just personality wise, he doesn't sell me. That's the thing. It's not about the work in the ring. It's about really the personality. I think it'll work though because they work so well together. Separately, that's when I'm not a fan. So I don't know. That's not going to happen. Like you just mentioned, she's the star. She's bringing him along for the ride. So
right, but she's a great manager too. So, if he eventually becomes his own character or they eventually flip the roles, because I just don't know where you're going from here, right? Because, again, Maria is not – look, I know you just had Lana in a match with Naomi, but Maria is not really a wrestler. So where are we getting at with Maria being back? I mean, unless Maria is going to start doing what she was doing in TNA or – Impact, sorry, where she's going to try to start getting her own advisory role or trying to oust Daniel Bryan as GM or something like that, what is she really going to do? So there's got to be a point where Mike Bennett is going to be the focus or he's going to be the wrestler. They might just be drawing you in with Maria and then so that it's not so much on Mike Bennett that here we go, here's this guy we don't know, but we know who Maria is. Like, you can introduce him gradually because you're doing it through her.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, especially for fans who actually do know who she is. Now, we still need to take into consideration, she's been away from WWE quite a while. And I'm sure there was a lot of faces in the crowd. And I think, what,
like,
honestly, like
10 years, right? Like 2006?
Yeah. So think, and you notice the crowd reaction. I'll be honest with you. The crowd reaction was kind of ho-hum on this because you only had a section of that audience that were kind of like, yes, she's back. And then the rest of them were like, who's back? I don't know who this is. And that's because she's been gone so long. So I think it's going to take a little time, but they at least have video packages of her from the past, and maybe they can educate people through their own tapes. Now, for you fans out there,
I think they're going to try to avoid the whole – I don't know that Maria wants to ever go back to that ditzy Maria character.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with that.
But I'm just talking about like montages of some of the stuff that she's done. You can – cut. They have great editors at WWE. They can cut out the stuff you don't want to be seen. So I'm just saying, at least they have video of her, right? They actually own content. So, and maybe they can educate people that way through a video package. We've seen on WWE television lately, they've done a great job in building people through video packages and kind of telling a story without having them out there speaking or just wrestling. So that's the good thing. So they have a way to do it. And I just want to let everybody know, if you've never seen these two before and you don't know much about it, just go on YouTube, type in Mike and Maria Bennett and put Impact or TNA and see some of the videos.
Or ROH, because...
Yeah, Ring of Honor too. Yeah,
that's where you get Mike Bennett's probably his best wrestling, and you get where Maria started the character of the First Lady of Wrestling, which she did say that. So, you know, she's bringing that into WWE, which I'm surprised that they're really letting her do because it's from another company. But, yeah, I mean, and this is also a trademark thing, right? They've had the trademark for Maria Kanellis before.
Mm-hmm.
So they can easily trademark that again instead of having to go through new trademarks for Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis Bennett and having the whole Bennett thing in there and people being like, well, who's that? I know who Maria Kanellis is, and it's just easier just to have him take the name. And of course, you know, Vince can make the joke as well. So, you know, which I'm sure JBL will just throw right under everything and it will become stupid by the, you know, the third time he says it on SmackDown on Tuesday.
Oh, you know, it's going to be just like that. But it's exciting. And I think me and you both are really curious to see how this is all going to shake out for both of them. Because, you know, they've got a lot of talent. Let's just see how they're utilized. That's the big key here. And I'm excited about it. Let's move on, though, Sean. Let's talk about, you know, we're kind of talking about the women's division a little bit here. Let's go ahead and talk about this first match of the show.
Hold on. Before we talk about the match, talk about making you with a video package.
Oh,
that video package was awesome for that ladder match. And it was so awesome that they had to wait until all the women were in the ring to do the video package. Normally you do it before, which I think makes what happened at the end of this match even worse because they tried to make this video package one of the big parts of this whole thing to show how cool this was, how big of a big deal this was. And then you go and have... What happened, Gary?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. And just to note that like I was mentioning to you guys, the video packages have been so good lately. And this, once again, told a story and they led into this match. Let's talk about the fact that we had Charlotte, we had Becky Lynch, along with Carmella, Tamina, and, you know, not to be mentioned, not forgetting Natalya, a part of this match. And you know, this really was kind of fun to see that Tamina was the one bulldozing people at the beginning here, and she was really taking control. Eventually, things got a little evened out. You saw a lot from Charlotte, you know, of course, her taking a big spot, you know, to knock out three of the basically three of them. And then we get the whole matchup where basically it's a good back and forth from a lot of these. But really what's kind of funny here is we have, you know, Carmella, someone that really honestly was not a big fan favorite, sitting in the ring after this whole situation. Becky Lynch climbs up the ladder, is going to make her way, and is going to be your first women's Money in the Bank holder. And guess who gets involved? None other than James Ellsworth. Pushes her off the ladder. She's off. Carmella's on the ground. He climbs up the ladder, unhooks the briefcase, and drops it right into Carmella's lap. Basically, right there, crowning her the new and the first ever Money in the Bank champion or winner, whatever you want to call it, for the women's division. And here's the thing. Here's a couple of things, Sean. I'll just mention them off the top here. You know, I get it. It's an ODQ, but I think it's kind of weird to have what they built up in that video package, very feminine, very strong feminine, and then go to this where a man gets involved and a man has to give a woman the champion. Or not, I keep saying champion, giving her that opportunity to hold a briefcase to be a champion eventually. And then you have these referees that can't make up their mind. All it takes is Ellsworth to announce her as the Money in the Bank winner, and it's confirmed. That didn't make any sense to me. So I've got a few problems here at the end. I think the match
I think
fine.
What it was Ellsworth, when he got over there, that's mm-hmm. when he found out that they had approved it, and so that's he announced it.
I never got that. I watched and I listened.
They never officially said it, but I think what they were trying to get at is that by the time Ellsworth got over there, they had already sort of come to a decision, and he sort of did like that whole thing where, you know, like in a football game, one of the players will go over there and finally they catch the tail end where they find out who the penalty's on, sort of what Ellsworth did. And then he just decides to announce it.
Yeah. I mean, you give me that benefit of the doubt, but I still right. think it does not come off very well. I think, you know, that is what it is. It's part of the entertainment part, but I kind of look at this as kind of a rough thing, Sean. That, like I said, the match was fine. I think they started to really heat up and do a pretty decent job of this first Women's Money in the Bank match. But I look at this as kind of taking a hit for them because I just don't like it. I wanted a clean victory. I think a lot of other fans did too.
Yeah, a ton of fans did too. This was a very huge topic of conversation. I think... a very divided, controversial decision. I think people, it was weird. People from both sides, like the people that I know that are super feminist, right? Or, you know, super into the, oh, we really want the women to do this and that, you know, you don't need to be, the men don't need to be mansplaining stuff, whatever, you know, the whole thing James Ellsworth jokes about all the time. They were actually for this, citing the whole, oh, well, this is heat on Ellsworth, right? This is just total cheap heat on Ellsworth that he won the match for Carmella. And that, you know, oh, this is just going to draw more attention to them than when they come out on SmackDown. They're going to get super booed and whatever. And, you know, look, this may all work. And I think in the long run, it probably does work, right? If they can keep this up for Carmella. But my thing is, I just wish WWE would stop insulting us with the whole, we're going to make history. And they said it about 12 times, by the way. Mm-hmm. We're going to make history. And I'm not exaggerating that number. I think I saw someone actually had it written down. They said that. But we're going to – that whole video package was so great. They waited till everybody was in the ring to air the video package. And then they had the women go out there. That's why they didn't do a whole lot, because this match was really just an angle to get to the, you know, James Ellsworth eventual thing. They did some spots like Charlotte doing that big rounding splash to the outside and – they hit each other a little bit with the ladders, but they didn't do what you would have done, like you saw with the men, you know, go a long time and really go out there. And especially, I think the women kind of seemed a bit, I'm not going to say, they were a bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I wonder if it's just because I think they were trying to make sure they hit everything so they could eventually get to the point, which was, you know, to do that whole angle with Ellsworth. But look, I think it works for Carmella, as in it gets to the briefcase, which we talked about. Carmella was going to be the one pushed, right? And that it, there was a good chance that she could get the briefcase. And so she got it. I think they could have done almost anything, right? They could have had Ellsworth knock a bunch of the women off the ladder, which I think that's what he did, right? He knocked a couple of them off.
Well, and I know then, he knocked Becky Lynch off, but yeah.
Right, yeah. He knocked Becky Lynch off. So you could have had – he knocked off Becky Lynch, and he could have helped her up the ladder. Anything but him walking up the ladder himself, grabbing it off of there, and then dropping it into Carmella's arms. As long as she was the one that actually went up there and got it, I think you would have a lot less people yelling and screaming right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the heat works better that way. But they chose to go about this way, and this almost seems like a, oh, ha, ha, ha. The women make a historic moment, and the man is the one that wins the championship. Like, thank you. Thank you for going backwards. But in the other end, you know, a heel did heelish things. I think this is going to be very divisive until we know what they decide to do on Tuesday, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, Bischoff says it all the time, right? Controversy equals cash or something to that effect.
Right. Look, we're all talking about it. It's the talk of the town of the pay-per-view.
And WWE wants it to be the talk of the water cooler tomorrow. And they want it to be the talk of the week until Tuesday. You know, and then on Tuesday, hey, it grabs people to watch Tuesday. It's going to be the first thing addressed on SmackDown Live on Tuesday. Sean, I mean, you know, the people that watch this show are going to be definitely tuning in because they want to know.
My problem is that the GMs, can they not just not ever show up on pay-per-view? Never. Like, can Shane McMahon not come out there and just say that? Yeah. Just to not insult our intelligence that he's just never there. Like, he can show up on a SmackDown like it's no big deal, but on pay-per-view, oh my God, he's nowhere to be seen. Like,
it must not be in his contract.
Maybe. But it's just like, he can't go out there and go, I'm going to discuss this with Daniel Bryan, and we will reveal what we're going to do on SmackDown, but we are going to deal with this instead of doing it on a tweet.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you know, I think that makes a bigger impact with people.
No, I agree. But, you know, I think we see this a lot, though. Even on some of the SmackDowns and Raw shows where you're like, okay, why didn't the GM come out? Like, I'd be pissed if I was the GM if this happened. I'd be out immediately. But I think they're afraid of overusing him. And not only that, you know, once again, there's a reason they did this. And bringing out Shane just to do that may not gave the same effect, you know, and they don't want Carmella to look like she's scared or shocked that, you know, Shane's out there. He's going to take the match and restart it. You know, she probably didn't want that. So they
I think they could have done it after the women's match when she came out there, the women's title match.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
When that match ends, he could have come out there.
Yeah, I know. I'm not against it. I'm really not. I'm just trying to look at it from their point of view, you know, and
right,
the fact that you don't want to overuse the GM. You don't want them to be the center of attention. That's not their job. Their job is to basically play the background role of, hey, I'm here to make a few decisions. After that, the show's up to you guys. And that's probably what they were doing.
That's the thing. Like, the match just – I forgot about the match, really, because that's all I can think about is that moment. And, look, they want you to think about the moment more than anything. But for me, I just – I wish that they would stop talking about making history.
Mm-hmm.
and then doing something like this. That's very insulting to... I go back to that whole thing of, like, we have daughters, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be able to watch, like, I want there to be moments that I can say, like, hey, look, you know, this girl just won this big match and whatever, you know, if she was aspiring to be a wrestler, to show her that, like, oh, look, look at these big moments that could happen for women or whatever. It's just like, it feels like you, every time we're going to have that, it gets ripped away by something dumb that they decide to do. And again, is I understand what they're trying to do here. I'm not saying that what they did was wrong. It's just, this is very Vince McMahon to decide that we're going to hype this up about, same thing with the Hell in a Cell match, right? Where they did this the wrong way. It was about history, history, history. And then you had no real heat to that match. Well, here, you make it about history, and then you rip that history stuff away when you do stuff like that. So it's just, eh.
It's Vince trolling us. He knew people would be upset.
Yeah.
And the way that they, you know, like you said, they keep going back to this is history. It's just a way to turn that knife just a little bit more, you know. He's already got it in you, but he's just turning it and turning it because he knows how upset you are about the fact that it wasn't clean. It took a man to be a part of this. All those other things we didn't like, you know. So it is what it is. I mean, I think it, like I said, it basically brings in the controversy. It's going to get people to watch SmackDown Live, you know, and we'll find out more about the repercussions from all this. Let's go ahead and talk about that women's match, that women's title match that you were just mentioning, Sean. Naomi does defend her women's title against Lana. Lana actually comes out following the, you know, women's ladder match and has an interview and basically says that they all better be glad that I wasn't involved in that match because it would have ended completely different. But I'm glad everybody is backing Naomi because I'm going to prove everybody wrong. Basically what she said in a way. But then she comes out in this match and, you know, it's her, basically her second match. Now, the first match she ever had was at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas at AT&T Stadium in a huge match where it was just basically every woman on the roster. So
it was that 10 woman tag thing.
Yeah, it was just, it really didn't showcase her at all. This actually showcased her in her second match, you know, and, Sean, I have to say, in her first match, did not do too bad. You know, wasn't crisp, wasn't the best you've ever seen. I got to give it to Lana, though, because it looks like she's done plenty of, you know, prepping. Seems like she's been working hard in the ring training. You know what? What's kind of funny, and Sean, you may have a better grasp on this because you've been watching wrestling for such a long time, and I've watched it for a while, but you have a little bit deeper history than I do. I kind of took away that she's been watching some Bret Hart matches, maybe even some Chris Jericho matches, where she was very scientific. She knew where to throw in the knees, throw in. I love the spot where, you know, Naomi's hanging outside the ropes and she just pulls her leg out there and kicks her in the face. That's stuff that you would have saw Bret Hart do. Maybe even Chris Jericho, guys like that, using different little things that most wrestlers kind of, you know, they use the cookie cutter stuff. They don't do those little extra things. I really respected that. Thought she did a great job in this match. And really what happens here is Naomi is doing okay for herself, but then Lana starts to get control, which means Carmella has to come out and stop the entire match and pretend like she's going to cash in her women's Money in the Bank briefcase, and she never does. Basically, she pretends, waves it off, says, never mind, and then looks back at Lana, and then Lana eventually does get a submission move put on her. And what's funny is Naomi actually talked about the name of this move on Talking Smack following this show, but it is FTG, Feel the Glow. That's the name of that submission move, and Lana has to tap out, and Naomi is still your champion. What did you think about the match, Lana and her first match, and of course we'll talk Carmella.
Yeah, you know, the Carmella is just heel doing heel things when they have the the Money in the Bank thing, right? That's what they do, which I don't have a problem with. That's what they're gonna do. That's what heels do, unless you're Dean Ambrose. when they have the Money in the Bank, you're gonna do stuff like this because you're threatening the face that's not expecting when you're gonna cash in. So, I mean, I'm fine with it. Expect her to do that a bunch. The Lana, I thought what they did was they worked a very, you call it scientific, which is fine. That's what it is. It's just very basic wrestling 101, grab a hold and work on the body part. And then Lana, use your legs. You're flexible. You know, Jericho and Bret Hart might have had to do a gut punch because their legs may not have gone that far. Lana's to kick Naomi in the back of the head like that from the floor. But, you know, I agree with you. Lana looked good for her first match. Again, they didn't – I think that's the point, right, though. Like, they're protecting her. They didn't overdo anything, didn't make her do anything ridiculous just to have her do it. They had her work within her parameters that she felt comfortable with. And then you have Carmella come in for the distraction, which I think leaves a bad taste in your mouth. You didn't really need it. That was their way of protecting Lana because Lana's distracted. And then Lana taps out.
Mm-hmm.
And right when, you know, Lana had started to get control and you thought, okay, well, she's going to win. And she did get that one near fall, but... And she got the kick out of the review, which that's good. You know, that's one of Naomi's big moves. But I think you know, good. I'm glad that we can have another serviceable woman on the roster, and hopefully she can keep getting better. You know, so if you can fill the wrestling time and do well enough, you have the crowd behind you. The thing is, the crowd was kind of didn't really care. Too much here, but when they did, they chanted for Lana. So,
yeah, isn't that funny?
I think that sort of tells you if you can get the wrestling down a little bit more and improve, that she might get the fans a lot more behind her, and they have a face that they can use whenever they want.
Yeah, and you know, really, and I thought to myself, it's usually the championship belt that's the focus, and it sort of was, but at the same point, it was, to me, more about getting Lana in that situation where she looks like she can be a great fit on this roster. It looks like she is a competitor instead of just someone who's out there to just be out there and who you know is not going to win any matches. That's not true with her, and now they just added that depth to the roster. Now, despite the fact that she may not be super, you know, I don't want to be derogatory or anything. Maybe I should change my terminology. She may not be the most talented at this moment because she hasn't had the time in the ring that these other ladies have. But I think when time that will come and them hiding things, that's okay. It's okay to hide that she can't do some of the other things that maybe a Becky Lynch could do. Some of the other things that, you know, people that spend a lot of time in the indie circuit wrestling could do. I think it's fine. And I think, honestly, she comes out of this a winner. I don't think she really comes out of this match a loser, especially for the fact that Carmella screwed the match up for her. Because, honestly, the way it was looking, Lana was going to win that match in a way.
Right.
If you stop right there, Lana was going to win that match. So I think Lana comes out the winner here. Yes, Naomi is still your champion. I don't know how great she really comes out of this. But, I mean, Naomi's Naomi. And, of course, they had her on Talking Smack later on. And I think she did a good job of just kind of protecting herself and telling people that, look, she backs up what she says, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, kind of getting a few things, trying to still get the crowd behind her.
And that's good. I think, you know, me and Paul talked about the possibility of them having Lana win here. And I think thinking about it after, especially after the decision, the way that they had Carmella win.
Mm-hmm.
Now they did this with the men later on, and they could have very well done it with the women, where you have the two heels going against each other. But I think with having two women that are about as equal in wrestling ability as Carmella and Lana are in a match, ooh, I don't know that you want that. And then you really would have been having, you're basically telling the crowd, like, all right, chant for Lana now, because if you didn't chant for her before when he really didn't want you to, you're going to now because you're not going to, you're going to boo the crap out of Carmella after what just happened.
So, yeah.
And also you need to keep the respect for the championship that you're trying to, as much as Raw, we talk about that they sometimes forget some of the women, don't use them all. SmackDown has done a really good job making the women feel important. And I think if you give it to Lana, as much as she did well today, and I think she did better than, that match was better than it had any right to be, she's not ready for that right now. So I think you haven't given it to some of your other women to put it on Naomi. You give it to Lana like that. I just, you know. Have Carmella beat Naomi, who has some credibility. Naomi beats, or Carmella beats Lana, it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, you know? You're exactly right. And, you know, I mentioned this in our preview, is if they put the women's ladder match before the women's title match, you were going to be able to predict what was going to happen. And I think after we saw that Carmella was going to be the winner, you kind of thought to yourself, well, really, this is Naomi's game then. Naomi's going to win, you know. And that's okay. They still did a good job teasing that maybe she couldn't, but I think that pretty much kind of pointed you in what direction they were going to go in the women's title match. I think also Lana. I got to praise Carmella for the fact that she's doing a pretty good job of playing that heel. And I think this could get her so much more heat, right, Sean? All this controversy. I think that whatever she can do to really get herself ready to get on SmackDown and just to act obnoxious and just really get into it will do her a lot of favors.
Well, she doesn't really have to. It's James Ellsworth that acts obnoxious for her.
Well, he can do that, but she's got to do some of this on her own.
James Ellsworth is on the level of possibly like Vicky Guerrero of he could take over a segment.
And you're right, and I think it's great.
And it becomes more about him than her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just saying we can't continue the process of Carmella's just there, because that's the way she's always felt. She's just part of there, you know. She's just was the vision. No, we need to eventually get to the point where we're like, man, she can't stand her. She's a part of. Mm-hmm. She's gonna have a big match this Sunday. I really hope that whoever is facing her wins. You know, that's the point of caring you need to get about her, because if you're caring more about James Ellsworth, I don't know. I don't know that you get hype about
that. Well, you react to James Ellsworth, what he says,
mm-hmm.
and that puts the heat on Carmella, very much like you react to what Paul Heyman says, and you're putting the heat on Brock, you know. So, I mean, that's way two different ends of great work spectrum. But still, the point is valid that Ellsworth is trying to be the heater for Carmella. It works, just like you said, you've got to really start transferring that over to her, because she got a little bit of reaction when she came out, but she still doesn't really get much. And if she's going to be holding that money in the bank, people have got to care. And Baron Corbin has that same issue, too, when we talk about him later. This better work for him, because if it doesn't, you've got dead weight as your money in the bank.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the thing. And there's several people on the roster. I mean, they're still trying to win people over for gender.
I think for gender, they're doing a much better job than.
Yeah,
than
they are
the
now.
Two.
But beforehand, you couldn't say that, you know.
I do think they missed a big. After seeing that video, why the hell did you not have some kind of party for gender in India?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you rent out a place and make it seem like he's entering this big area and people are going crazy for him, like, just anything to make it seem like a big deal other than him just talking about it and then showing paper clippings and stuff like that, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
You're going to show all that stuff from India, like not having him be there and doing something there. I think that's a big mistake on their end.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'd really need to utilize India. I mean, not go as far as Impact does and pay people to go to shows, but, you know.
Well, yeah.
I'm just saying. But, you know, but getting back really quickly, I just want to end that with the whole segment. My point with Carmella is I really think that she's going to have to get to the point where she's strong enough. Now, Paul Heyman can go and he can talk for anybody. I mean, heck, he can get on there and really praise, I don't know. Let's say TJP.
Paul Heyman had, we forgot to talk about that the Fashion Files, Fandango had Paul Heyman's cell phone.
Oh, that's right. He did, didn't
and
he?
Paul Heyman actually tweeted out that he said that is funny as fuck. And that he was jealous because Fandango looked way better at his age with the phone than Paul Heyman did.
That's
so
awesome.
You know.
Yeah. That's great. But speaking of Paul Heyman, I just think that Paul Heyman could right now go out and promote TJP and how much heat could he get for him? He can get tons of heat for TJP, but TJP's got to do his part. And I think the same for Carmella, looking for her to do some things. I just want to see more, but I love that phone. I forgot about that too, Sean. Thank you for adding that in, man.
That's part of the 80s package right there of having that old phone. I mean, Paul Heyman can sell ice to an Eskimo, right? So it's like, you know, Carmella just, this is part of it, right? You have to see on Tuesday what happens, what they decide to do, how they fix this for the Battleground pay-per-view or whatever, and we go from here. So, maybe they skip that and just have it be for SummerSlam or, you know, who knows. But
yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about that. Let's move on to talk about this tag title situation. And, you know, the Usos came in and had to defend their tag belts against the New Day. That's right. And this was a big match. And, boy, Sean, I'm going to admit to you, I thoroughly enjoyed this match. This was way, you just mentioned the same words earlier. I'm going to mention them again. This is way better than it should have been. I really was enjoying all the false finishes. I just think they did a bang up job. I'm going to let you kind of talk about what you thought about this match, but I really enjoyed it. The Usos do win, but they win by count out. That's right. They eventually say, look, this is getting too serious. We almost lost our belt several times in this match. Well, we're just going to hang out and just let it be done. Let it just count us out. So the New Day technically wins, but the titles do not change hands with a count out.
This was a really well done match. great work from all the guys involved. Big E, I wish he wouldn't do that Spirit of the Outside, but that's, I'm preaching the choir at this point. He's going to keep doing it. Charlotte tried to do that to Tamina, and Tamina crashed and burned. And then she had to do it to her again at the stairs. But, it was good to see Kofi back wrestling. The trust fall to the outside. That was funny. I think this was about having distractions. You know, you had Xavier Woods had to go in and distract the Usos from getting a win. That lariat to the outside that Jimmy did, that was hellacious lariat. And then I think JBL would have been proud sitting right there watching that. And certainly I think it's it was just something that both teams did well. The false finish at the end with the Midnight Hour was really, really good. He came in at the last possible second, and then they just decide to leave, which leaves it open for them to do a stipulation match for next pay-per-view, which I think Paul talked about them possibly going that route. Good on him for getting it right. And yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I thought they did good work. Just again, kind of, you have one of those finishes where you're like, man, another finish on this pay-per-view where not totally, either not definitive or just kind of, it's kind of crappy. But again, it works because heels are doing heel things. I'm not going to say it's totally wrong. Just again,
And you're right about that. And I think with a match of this caliber, we'd be definitely talking about it even more if it was in a situation where that clean finish you're wanting as you're watching it. And I mean, I'm completely happy with the work they put in. I think it was a lot of fun to watch, and like I said, a much better match than I would have ever said it would have been. But I mean, that ending kind of leaves you with that, well, you know, it's not so great because of that. But not only that, we've got to wait till Tuesday to get some more confirmation on what they're going to do, blah, 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 blah. It is what it is. But I think all of us on this show, at least, predicted that there was going to be the Usos winning their titles and retaining them. Maybe no big surprise there. But, I mean, I will have to say, I just appreciated the work rate. I think Kofi Kingston really did a great job here. He did a great job selling with the knee, all that stuff. I mean, it was just a lot of fun to watch. And I think these guys, you know, really knocked one out of the park tonight. And your Usos are still champions, and I'm really, you know, hoping that they can have, you know, a bigger feud, if not the same kind of feud that they had here with the New Day. Of course, they'll probably continue this New Day thing out until New Day wins, so it'll probably be their last title feud. Let's move on here, and let's talk about the WWE Championship match. That is, of course, with Jinder Mahal coming in and defending his title against the Randy Orton that we know and really don't know at the same point. I'll get into that explanation. But yeah, we get in here, and of course, before they even introduce anyone, they introduced all the guys on the outsides, all the legends. You know, Bob Orton's out there. You got Ric Flair. Several of these legends, I know I even saw Sergeant Slaughter out there. So it was really cool to see several different legends out at ringside all sitting together getting ready for this match. Which, the reason I say this is a Randy Orton we don't know, Sean, is because I still get a kick out of the fact that they're praising all these legends and talking about legends with the guy that's considered the legend killer. You know?
Yeah, I think the point was that Randy Orton has grown up since then, and that they respect him now, and that because he's American, they will go to his side, even if he is the legend killer, I guess. But, I saw that too. I was like, well, how many of those legends did he kill there?
Yeah.
Quite a few of them. So this is kind of weird, but.
Very. But I mean, you know. Yeah, you got to love the fact that the nostalgia that they brought out these guys and people could clap for them and they're Hall of Famers and all that stuff. So I was happy they did that for that fact. But yeah, let's talk about the match itself. So, I mean, the bell rings and we have Randy Orton on fire. I mean, he is beating down Mahal, you know, really working his magic. Mahal starts to get back involved in this match and get more competitive. But, you know, really the way this thing works out is, you know, it looks like Randy Orton is going to win. But, you know, of course, the Singh brothers have to get involved. And at one point, Mahal was going to get pinned. But guess what? His foot ends up on the rope because of the Singh brothers. That causes, you know, a lot of problems. That also causes the Singh brothers to be thrown out. That's right. They were ejected from ringside. But before they left, they decided to pick on all poor Bob Orton and grab him by the neck collar and, threatening. Well, Randy Orton did not
look so bad. Like, they were just terrible. Waiting for Orton to show up. His dad just got this whole, almost like he's smiling face on. Like, oh, yeah, I'm back in it, boys. And then finally, Randy Orton shows up to do the same thing as last time. And almost kills one of the Singh brothers.
Oh,
like,
God.
Dude, stop watching Roddy Strong already. And, you know, do these these moves without trying to kill someone. And, yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. It's like the same thing. He took him out of the announce table again.
Yeah.
Even and using that bad leg to plant and do the RKO.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing, you know, early in the match, you did see him go out of the ring and kind of tweak a knee, which he was supposed to be selling, but sometimes he forgot, which is, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's Randy Orton. What can we expect?
Yeah, and not only that, you know, like saying the Singh brothers grabbing Bob Orton, it's kind of weird to me that Ric Flair or no one else decided to kind of help the guy. I mean, come on. But that is what it is. But, you know, we eventually have, of course, like Sean just mentioned, Randy Orton RKOs one of the Singh brothers, and then basically RKOs the other one through a table, which was pretty scary. Then it gets back in the ring, and Jinder Mahal, doesn't take much for him to kind of take advantage of that distraction, and he hits the Colossus, and 1, 2, 3, he is still your WWE champion. The modern-day Maharaja is going to continue his reign, Sean.
He sure is, because he is great, that Maharaja. And, yeah, you know, again, I'm going to say that they repeated a lot of what we saw at Backlash, and especially the ending. The match was better, much better than the Backlash match. In fact, Jinder Mahal actually looked really good here. He showed he can work a body part. He was aggressive, just got heat on himself. It helps to be in Randy Orton's hometown, but still. And then, you know, I think that they could have done a little bit different than just having the Singh brothers get attacked again. And then Randy Orton does so much stuff that he forgets about who's in the ring. And then, oh, bam, Colossus. And then he wins. Like, you could have done something else to get him to win. That's a little bit different. That doesn't make Randy Orton look like a total idiot, number one. Number two, just not the same thing. But hopefully this is over. Although I did hear rumors, and I've seen some people that, you know, apparently have some knowledge. I don't know if this is true or not. But we do know what language a certain Jinder speaks. And even though it wasn't started by him, another Punjabi man began this match. We might have a Punjabi prison match between Randy Orton and Mr. Mahal. So,
wow.
If you get ready for that.
Yeah.
Gary, maybe.
If this does happen, let's just hope it's a better than the ones we had seen in the past.
I thought the one with Undertaker? The first one was terrible.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one it was, who he wrestled. But the second one was actually decent. I'd have to go back and try to find them, but like, just, oh God, this is such, oh man, I don't know that I want to see this happen or not. It's just, that's really just stereotypical at that point. Oh, we're going to get into a Punjabi prison match because we can.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like, you know. Hey, we have two Mexican wrestlers. Oh, that means that we gotta have a, a taco on a ladder match or something. You know, it's silly. You know, it's like, come on, guys, you don't have to just use their heritage all the time. Why don't you just have a regular match? I mean, come on. But it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I want to praise Jinder here, and Orton made Jinder look really good too. Let's not just act like Orton did nothing here, but again, just wish they would have done something different with the finish. But yeah, I mean, he's still your champion, and it's kind of left you in a lurch about who could win the Money in the Bank at the end.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the big key here too, being, you know, right before it. And I thought to myself, you know, for entertainment reasons, they did a really good job. I was entertained. But the wrestling part, you probably were not pleased. You were probably not all that excited, and I understand that. So you got to understand where they were coming from. And this was really, honestly, transition match is kind of what they were doing here. They were just trying to get to the next thing before they get to something that they're really, really focused on. And that's what kind of what they had to do here. So, but yeah, Jinder Mahal is still your WWE champion. Now let's talk about someone who's going to be trying to be the next WWE champion, and that is the winner of the Money in the Bank. So let's talk about the Money in the Bank match for the men. This is a match that all of us were really curious because they had the competitors that I think all of us were really wanting to see involved. You know, you had Dolph Ziggler, you had Kevin Owens, you had Shinsuke Nakamura, you had AJ Styles and Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn all involved in this big match. And this is a match that I think, you know, as the entrance music hit for each of these guys, you're just like, okay, let's get to the next guy and get everybody involved. But when, you know, you have Shinsuke Nakamura's music play, he comes out, but he is attacked by Baron Corbin. Yeah, that's right. Baron Corbin decides he's going to get things started off early. You know, hits Shinsuke with a camera, hits him with a ladder, does some damage, and really, honestly, leaves the referees in a quandary because he comes in and says, start, you know, ring the bell. But the referees don't know what to do. They eventually decide to ring the bell, and the match starts. And, you know, there's lots of spots here, so, you know, I'll let Sean talk about his favorite ones. But really what kind of shook out in the highlights here in this match, besides some of the big moves, you had Shinsuke Nakamura actually come back out and get involved in this match. And he pretty much clears house. He gets Corbin out of the ring before Corbin's able to climb the ladder for the briefcase. And he, you know, honestly, Shinsuke started clearing the house of anyone else that decided to step in, which honestly, he needed to do something like this to make himself look even better. And I'm happy that he basically had that opportunity. What we get here, Sean, is the moment I knew you were going to love, and that's when AJ Styles steps across from him in the ring, and they're staring at each other, and they're going to climb that ladder and see if either of them can be involved. But I just love the tease that, you know, this could be another matchup we'd love to see. And we've seen in New Japan, we want to see that kind of match here in WWE. But yeah, both these guys go to climb the ladder. Baron Corbin comes and pushes them over, and is able to regain the ladder and get the Money in the Bank briefcase. And now that's it, Sean. I mean, Baron Corbin could be your next WWE champion if he cashes the thing in and does his plays his cards right.
Yes, he could. And him and Jinder do have a face-off on Talking Smack, which I thought Jinder was really good on Talking Smack again, talking about him and his people hate him because of his skin color and all that stuff, whatever. Just he keeps getting better on the microphone, and he looks like a star, too, which I think we should point out that that helps a lot for him. But, you know, Baron Corbin, on the other hand, I think he's been getting better, too. The choke slam on the ladder on AJ was ridiculous. That half the big dragon suplex by Sami Zayn on Kevin Owens, reigniting their feud, and them just killing each other again, and then, you know, Owens and AJ, and Styles and Corbin, because Baron Corbin knocks out Shinsuke at the beginning because his entrance takes too long, and then Shinsuke's out for most of the match. You know, a lot of people were talking about, hey, what happened to Owen? Roman Reigns was out for most of the match. Everybody booed. But, you know, Shinsuke doesn't, and it's okay. I think I distinctly remember the difference in the crowd actually caring about the fact that Shinsuke was out. Because when he came back, they were singing his song when he was beating up Baron Corbin. And they were chanting his name and everything else. So I'm pretty sure that's much different than what, you know, they failed to do with Roman. I think the part with him and AJ was absolutely well done. They take the ladder and they move it aside so that they can have a stare down. Then they just beat each other up for a while. And, man, that was such a cool moment. Just so cool. And Nakamura's going to do a move, and then AJ comes out of nowhere with the forearm and knocks him off the ladder, and then they punch on top of the ladder. Oh, it's so good. Can't wait till they have their match in WWE. You know, we already saw it in New Japan. I mean, I don't know how they can top that, but seriously, like, just getting that moment, thank you, WWE, just for that moment. There was great, other great stuff in this thing. Dolph had some good stuff with Zayn as well, the big powerbomb. There was a Ushigaroshi on the ladder bridge that AJ did. Just, man. And then that kind of leads to the finish with AJ and Nakamura getting knocked over, and then Baron Corbin just comes in and picks up the scraps, of course, to get the win. So this was a great match. The best match of the show, match of the night, very easily. It's going to be a match of the year candidate on the lower end. There's so many great matches already that we've talked about. But, man, this was well worth sitting there for the 2.5 so hours, because they delivered with this.
Definitely. And, you know, Baron Corbin was one of the guys I think a lot of people were looking at as being that possible champion. And, you know, him winning it, you know, may not be a surprise to a lot of people, but, I mean, I think to a certain sect it is. And I'm happy for the guy. I mean, he's done some great things already in his young career in WWE, and I hope if he continues to get better, he gets even more. So, you know, good stuff for him. And, you know, really curious once again in these matches how everything's going to shake out. But yeah, Sean, that concludes all of our matches to talk about in Money in the Bank. And we've had, you know, a lot of discussions that went a lot of places. But we got to summarize this thing and give it a rating for tonight. So what did you give this Money in the Bank?
I think I'm going to go with a solid 7. Tag title match was right there in the very good territory. Lana, I think, surprised with how good she is. The women's ladder match obviously was disappointing. We wanted more from that, but I think that will unravel itself when SmackDown gets here. And plus, you got the controversial deal with James Ellsworth and Carmella there. You had the Fashion Files thing was also a nice little nugget there. You had the debut of Maria and Mike. And, of course, the main event that absolutely delivered. And another very good WWE title match, too. So I think in-ring action delivered on this show. Just, I think what you're thinking about is some of the decisions on the results. How they did the results, I think, might really hurt in other people's eyes, but it's still a good show, I thought. And especially when your Money in the Bank, at least one of them super delivers, it puts it over the top for you.
Yeah, and you know, it is kind of funny. I mean, I think you're right on the 7. I think I'm going to go that same route too. I look at this as like an incomplete. It's like you get your paperback and they're like, well, you didn't fail, but you didn't pass. You really need to do a little bit more work before we can consider it complete and give you a solid grade. But you didn't fail, and we didn't just give you an F. I mean, we just, right now it's an incomplete. And that's kind of the way I felt overall. Despite a lot of the good things that happened, I felt like there were a few things that really honestly were just setups. It had no conclusion or not even a part of a conclusion. We were just basically making Money in the Bank the setup show to get to Tuesday and watch SmackDown Live, which, you know, hey, that needs to happen. But I think for other reasons, I don't think you need to hold the crowd hostage in some of this stuff, which they kind of did in a way. So that's okay, though. I mean, that's the way they decided to go with it. I just think that a 7 would probably be my best rating for what they gave us here this year at Money in the Bank. Yeah, that's our show tonight. We appreciate it, all of you, for tuning in, and we really, really do. And I know there are a lot of you who come in to check us out every week and all our shows, and there are some of you who have never heard of us before and you want to find out more. Well, guess what? I'll tell you how to find more. Make sure you go over to W2Mnet.com, and you can find us there. Heck, we have an About page. We have a lot of stuff there to kind of find out what Wrestling to the Max is all about. And, of course, you know, if you do know about us, you know that you can go and check us out on iTunes or wherever you find your podcast on, you know, by searching out Wrestling to the Max. You can go subscribe there, rate and review. Or if you like everything at W2Mnet.com, you're going to want to go to the W2M Network and subscribe there. And that's a big deal because you're getting a chance to hear other voices besides ours about the world of wrestling. Wrestling Unwrapped did their own version of Money in the Bank, and they reviewed it and kind of talked about how they felt about it. So go check out those guys, too. Harry and Patrick are awesome. We love those guys. We want those guys to definitely get some love from us. So there you go. Make sure you go check out that great show. We will, of course, be back on our part one episode of this week with episode 252. We'll be jumping into, of course, you know, a lot of the different news topics that are coming out of this weekend. Plus, we'll be talking some Ring of Honor. We'll also be getting into some other things in the world of wrestling. Plus, get Paul's ideas on Money in the Bank since he wasn't able to be on tonight. He'll give you his thoughts and his rating tomorrow night. And, of course, this week also part two of Wrestling to the Max will be there for you. Plus, the Raw, SmackDown Live, NXT.
We'll have, we'll have to also do ROH. The pay-per-view preview, because that's on Friday.
Yeah, that's right. So that's another thing to come check us out on part one tomorrow night, episode 252. And don't forget also the Raw review, SmackDown Live, NXT 205.
All those shows, the little tease is that, you know, some trouble brewing in Paradise. You know, Triple H is apparently not happy with Vince, how he uses NXT talent, so...
Dun, dun, dun. We'll get into that in quick hits. Don't worry. You're not going to miss that one. I can't wait to talk about that one for sure. So, but yeah, we are done. Thanks a lot for joining us once again, and we will catch you guys down the road. See you guys later.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts. Plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.